Sir Alec Guinness died on Saturday at the age of 86. Critics dubbed him a master of disguise for his ability to perform a wide range of roles, sometimes even within the same film, as was the case in his depiction of 8 different members of an eccentric English family in Kind Hearts and Coronets. Guinness's other memorable roles included Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars, a bank clerk turned criminal in The Lavender Hill Mob, and Colonel Nicholson in the 1957 film Bridge on the River Kwai, which won him the Oscar for Best Actor. He played a British commanding officer who just arrived in a Japanese POW camp. In this scene, he meets some American soldiers who are considering an escape.
Of course, it's normally the duty of a captured soldier to attempt escape. But my men and I are involved in a curious legal point of which you are unaware. In Singapore, we were ordered to surrender by command headquarters. Ordered, mind you. Therefore, in our case, escape might well be an infraction of military law. Interesting?
Yes, sir. Interesting point.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't quite follow you. You mean you intend to uphold the letter of the law, no matter what it costs?
Without law, Commander, there is no civilization.
That's just my point. Here, there is no civilization.
Then we have the opportunity to introduce it. I suggest we drop the subject of escape.
Terry Gross spoke with Sir Alec Guinness in 1986.
Do you remember any lasting advice that you got in your early years of acting about enunciation or breathing or speaking lines?
Oh, many, I think. But I think all advice is something to discard sooner or later. When I first used to go and have... I was trying to get a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and I went to Martita Hunt, who was an actress, and she formed my taste, I think, a great deal. And when she heard me reading, one of the kind of little... rule of thumb that she gave me was, she said, you know, for heaven's sake, never put the emphasis on an adjective unless you have to, or an adverb. Go straight for the verb, because that is the driving force of the sentence. Now, it doesn't mean to say that every time you speak a verb, you've got to plug it. But it did form, I think, the basis of my own appreciation of speaking, of listening to people. And I hear nowadays so much false emphasis, not just in the theatre, in fact, not so much in the theatre, as on railway stations when they tell you, you know, they say that in England, you know, they'll say the train for such and such a place will leave from platform some. And you think, was there any doubt about it? you get confused instead of them just saying, the train for such and such a place will leave at such and such a time. And
you joined the Navy in World War II. And I wonder if it gave you any ideas about acting, because you were exposed to so many different kinds of people and different experiences and different cultures as you sailed around the world.
Well, I think part of the title of my rather odd book, Blessings in Disguise, lies in my naval experience, insofar as if it hadn't been for the war, and God knows, you know, we can do without wars, I would no doubt have stayed in the West End Theatre in England. I would have moved with many delightful people, pretty frivolous, pretty light-headed, always concerned about what was next happening in the theatre. Well, the war came as literally a bombshell. I was just starting on what looked like a promising career, so it was a bit wretched to say goodbye to that. But it moved me for the next few years among people whom I was unlikely to meet, not from the point of view of observing them or what they were like, but getting to know men on the lower decks, and then later on I became an officer, and realizing that the world wasn't just theater. On the other hand, I had to perform as such, and I never knew what I was doing quite as a naval officer, and I was in command of a little ship built here in Quincy Yard in Boston. And so I really acted being a naval officer, or my idea of what a naval officer might be like. And I've always maintained that was the best performance I've given. I mean, it wasn't a very impressive one, and it was a very very junior, but it was a long run.
Several years after the war, you started making movies. Did you say to yourself, I want to do movies now?
No, it wasn't that. I'd never been particularly interested in movies. I don't know why. I'd loved going to them, but I'd never sort of thought of myself as going into movies. I thought I probably hadn't got the right face. But at the very beginning of the war, I had written a stage adaptation of Great Expectations, which was performed, and I was in it. And that was seen by David Lean and Ronald Neame, who were working together then. And at the end of the war, 1945, beginning of 46, they were going to make a film of Great Expectations, and they remembered seeing me, and I was still in the Navy when they contacted me, saying, you know, would you like to come and play that part you played on the stage on film? And I'd always rather thought, if ever I do a film, the first one must be something that I've already played in the theatre, so at least I know what I'm at so far as the character's concerned. Then I can put myself in the hands of technicians. And that's what happened.
What was your reaction when the first time you saw yourself in a leading role in a movie?
Well, I don't know. I think I was rather sick. I would have seen the dailies, as they're called. We call them the rushes in England, of Great Expectations, and was horrified at what I saw. But David Lean was very keen that his actors should see the rushes. So for the first few films I made, I always did. And I suppose I learned something. I learned not to fidget or twitch or some little mannerism which was creeping in. Now, or for many years now, I never look at them. I mean, I never look at them at the dailies.
You say you were horrified at the beginning when you looked
horrified.
At them. What horrified you?
Oh, I couldn't believe. It was something nauseating up there. I couldn't bear it.
You think that's a typical reaction that people have when they see themselves, especially if they're used to acting on stage?
Well, I have some people. I've caught a seen them watching themselves, and I've seen their faces suffused with pleasure.
In 1949, you made the movie Kind Hearts and Coronets, and you played eight roles. I think it was eight. You played an entire family in it. It's a really funny movie. Whose idea was it for you to play all those roles? How did that come about?
Robert Hamer, who directed it, who was a brilliant creature, alas, dead, invited me to play two of them, victims in it, I mean, two of the family. And I was on holiday in France, and I read the script lying on a beach, and I laughed within two pages of it out loud, hurried through the rest of the script, and thought, but it's ridiculous to play two. Either play one, which I can understand, or the whole lot. So I went to the post office and sent off a telegram and saying, you know, love the script, but how about me trying to play all eight? There could be a reason for a family likeness. And to my joy and delight, they said, yes, fine, try it.
Alec Guinness talking with Terry Gross. Here's a clip from Kind Hearts and Coronets. Guinness plays General Lord Rufus Descoigne, a member of a titled British family. All eight members of the family are played by Guinness and systematically killed off in the film. In this scene, the general is dining and is about to be the next victim. The first voice is that of the narrator and killer, played by Dennis Price.
It seemed appropriate that he who had lived amidst the cannon's roar should die explosively. I therefore concealed in a pot of caviar a simple but powerful homemade bomb. And through the post, I sent the caviar to the general.
I pretended to be deceived by the feint and sent our horse to meet it. At that moment, the concealed enemy emerged from behind the kopje. I held our guns fire till we could see the whites of their eyes. Used to get a lot of this stuff in the Crimea. One thing the Ruskies do really well.
Not an atom of him was left.
A scene from the 1949 film Kind Hearts and Coronets. We'll hear more from Alec Guinness in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1986 interview with Alec Guinness.
You did The Bridge on the River Kwai in 1957. Did you know as soon as you read the script you wanted to do the role?
No, not at all. The first script I read, I didn't care for at all. I thought it was not terribly good, and I turned it down. They didn't want me in the first place, that I found out as I started to film it. They wanted either Charles Laughton or Noel Coward, I believe. However, for various reasons, which I don't know, anyway, it came my way, and I said, I really don't quite see it. And the script was rewritten, not on my account, let me hasten to say, but it was, I think, David Lean, who directed it, thought there's a lot wrong with this, and it was rewritten. And when it was rewritten, you know, Sam Spiegel easily persuaded me to play it, although I'm not sure that I ever quite believed in the part.
What? Why not? What gave you doubts?
Well, he's such a blinkered man, you know, he's in such a narrow focus on life. I find it hard to be sympathetic with him. There are people like that, of course, but it didn't make for easy playing.
Do you feel you have to be sympathetic with a role in order to do a good job in it?
No, not sympathetic, but you have to have some sort of empathy of saying, well, I can understand that man, and, you know, that could be me or something. And I didn't quite feel that with Colonel Nicholson.
A role that you almost turned down, the way I understand it, was the role of Obi-Ben Kenobi in Star Wars. What, you saw the script first?
Yes, I don't know, I've heard this before. There was no question of me turning it down. I was doing a film in Hollywood, Murder by Death, and I think it was about the last day of shooting of my work on it, and suddenly there was this script on my makeup table, and I saw that it was George Lucas who had made American Graffiti by that time, but I had to rush off and work, and I said to various people, tell me what you know about George Lucas, and they all said, well, you know, that's a real filmmaker there, although he hadn't done anything tremendous. Got back, saw that the script was science fiction. I went back with enthusiasm because it was George Lucas. Saw it was science fiction and thought, well, that's not for me. I mean, I'm not that sort of. But I bet because it's Lucas, I better read a few pages and see what it's about. And I found myself turning the pages with alacrity. I didn't think the dialogue was very good. In fact, I thought it was rather bad. But the story held me. And so when I'd finished it, I contacted Lucas. We'd lunch next day, and I was very impressed by him. He was very quiet and very sensible. And I indicated, yes, I'd love to do it. I never turned it down at all.
You die in the first movie. Did you expect that you'd actually still be returning, nevertheless, for sequels?
No, I suggested that I should die when I did, and that I should be removed from the film because, I mean, I can say it now, I didn't dare at the time. I thought that the part which went on to the end of the film deteriorated and was less interesting. And I thought if I can go out rather spectacularly, that's all right. But I don't want to fizzle out.
Do you consider yourself to be one of the actors, I'm thinking here, one of the Gielgud, Richardson, Olivier actors?
No, I'm not in the same class. That doesn't worry me. I've never tried to be. I'm my own man, which may not be very impressive, but it's the best I can do. I'm happy to admire them and indeed many others. But I'm about, as I said, about 10 years younger than that particular brilliant and strange group of actors. And therefore, they're always, you know, when you're 20, you see those other people up there at 30 or in their 30s or something. That's the sort of, it's possible. And they remain always above you.
You've written about this constant conflict that you've had on the one hand, being equally repelled and attracted by the spotlight, is the way you said it. So you think you found your balance?
No, it'll never be a real balance. It'll always be shifting from one foot to the other, I suspect.
Sir Alec Guinness, he died Saturday. Suze Boland directed today's show. For Terry Gross, I'm Barbara Bogave.